Poor Jobo got bullied today.
I don't know what I did to deserve.
We came in and just bullied you.
Rough morning for Joe.
Yeah, it was three older guys just putting you in the locker. It's, now we're trying to be nicer. Now everyone's like, nice jacket, Joe. Sorry for bullying you for half an hour as we got ready for work today. That was a good warm-up for us, though. I think everyone's going to be sharp today after, you know, pummeling you for 30 minutes outside.
Everyone's
going to
be sharp except for Joe.
Yeah, Joe's sitting there like, it's fine.
Oh, I'm even sharper. My nerves are on edge now. No, I'm like, Joe, ready to go.
Quick twitch.
No, this is the thing, Joe. And Jobo's 22 years old.
23.
Hey. 23. See, again, yeah. That's always the sign.
I do
of
that on purpose.
22 and a half.
I do that on purpose. Yeah.
He's 23, which, Jobo, you're becoming a man. You're getting old before our very eyes.
I know.
23, whoa. But this is like when I was younger. My brother's 5 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And whenever my friends and I would get to my place and he was around, we'd obviously beat on him mercilessly. But guess what? My brother became tough. And now he can destroy me. It's not even close. It's like he can do the like fake stutter at me, and I flinch. I have to walk around on eggshells in the house. It backfired. The plan backfired. So someday the plan is that you get to this point where all the beatings and all the pummelings they result in you being a whip back. Mm. You know, where one day Jobo unleashes. And it's basically the final scene of 8 Mile.
Jobo's Fury.
Yeah.
Jobo's Fury.
Yeah. It's after all the mom spaghetti, you finally step up on stage and be like, whatever, Clarence, and we're, oh.
You get that look like Eminem, we're just staring off.
School. Yeah, exactly. Oh. It's not going to be good. Yeah. Now's not the time, though. Yeah. Yeah. You're not
Give
there.
It a shot. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah. You tried, but.
I'm not saying a word.
Yeah. Probably not. Okay. So I'm going to rapid fire through a couple of things from last night. Weirdly busy time. A lot of trades, NBA rumors are percolating still, and that's why we've got Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo, guy who says stuff, which I always appreciate and love. OG leaving clutch. I got Siakam questions that don't necessarily involve the trades. Also trades. Also trades.
A little bit of both.
Now I don't know if Damian Lillard is officially staying. Was that official? Is this over? Is
like
that
four
the beginning?
Yesterday.
Yeah. And then some of the markets for some of the free agents and what people are going to end up doing. But, okay, last night, NHL Awards. And I put it on, yeah, I think all of us know, right? It was not easy to watch.
It certainly wasn't,
it wasn't
comfortable.
It wasn't the entire time like, hey, dynamite. What a cast of personalities. Biz really worked his ass off. You got to give Biz credit for just willing to put himself out there. Thank God for Biz. I still don't understand why more NHL players haven't grasped that you can do this. But also, this is where I credit Biz. And I know this sounds like ass kissing, but people are always like, put yourself out there, put yourself out there, put yourself out there. There is something innate with that guy. Like, he is a special talent. He's able to do these things and just kind of keep taking on the chin and try bits. Imagine that. Okay, so one of the things in this business that's one of the hardest things you can do is when you're trying to do a bit, you're trying to joke around. It's like improv. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to send things over people's way. It's basically should be yes and, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they teach you in an improv class. Yes and, yes and. And there you go. That's how you build the bits. Biz is working with people all the time with these hockey players that come sit at the podium where he goes, hey, Connor Brewer, do a yeehaw. And he's like, no. He's just working with guys who will never yes and him. So, yeah, tough. I didn't know who anyone past Jelly Roll was, except for Nate Bargatze. That was pretty cool that they got Nate.
Yeah.
And then he tried to do a couple of bits, and I went, all right, don't make him do hockey bits. he had Gary Bettman there participating in some of the jokes. I don't really know Jelly Roll, I got to say. He's just popped up a lot in my recent life. Austin's
a huge fan, apparently.
Austin was losing his mind in the group chat that Jelly Roll was there. He's like, whoa, Jelly Roll. But then they went from Jelly Roll to people with like 100,000. The one guy, Kid G or whatever, I went, all right. We had to do better than this. We had to do better. And then I thought Dierks Bentley did really well. That guy is just a bona fide star, right? Like, that guy is the man. There's no question about it. He just suffered through same thing. Bad joke yeah. after bad joke that was written for him, and he just powered through it.
He was trying.
Yeah,
trying.
I enjoyed him immensely. But some real thoughts from the awards. Two things. Number one, Carlson wins the Norris. And it's just a little frustrating knowing that you've got a guy who was the best defenseman in the NHL last year. And whatever, I'm just, best offensive defenseman. Fine, I don't want to hear anybody push back on any of this. Best offensive defenseman in the NHL who, yeah, like has had some injury risks and who hasn't obviously had the perfect last run of years, who does come with a lot of risk. He's 33, which is fairly old for a hockey player. You'd think that maybe a year or two more at this level before you start to see meaningful decline. Maybe not. Maybe he does last longer. Other guys have done it, right? Like Nick Lidstrom lasted a lot longer. Mm-hmm. Some of the special guys have a tendency to stick around, even in a league that's so important about with skating. But Carlson's demanded this trade request. And I think it's really hard to be overly sympathetic for him because he took such a big bag of money from the San Jose Sharks. It's not exactly the most winning organization. And they were definitely at a inflection point in the franchise when he did sign there, right?
For sure.
And so I don't think anybody weeps for superstars that take the massive bag with the most amount of the most money possible. And then when they ask out, we're like, get him out of there. Get him out of San Jose. No one's feeling. He's not a lifer in San Jose, right? Yeah. He hasn't been giving his entire career to that place. He didn't take some type of a haircut. Those are the guys that we feel sorry for, right? Mm-hmm. We feel sorry for the Roy Halladays of the world where we go, man, he grinded it out with the Blue Jays year after year after year, and they just could not put a contender on him. Fine, get him out of there.
Yeah.
Let him go to the Phillies. Let him try to win.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of an annoying state of your league if the guy who wins the best defenseman award is borderline unmovable, like has wanted to trade for now 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we have in terms of rumors? I read an article the other day that was like possible landing spots for Carlson. And I went, oh, okay, interesting. And the whole article was like, yeah, but no. Yeah, but also
this couldn't work.
This won't happen and they won't do this. And I'm just thinking that that's a real tough thing for the NHL with the hard cap. And I know we talk about it at the deadline,
mm-hmm.
but it's also one of the frustrating things about right now as we're heading into this week for the Toronto Maple Leafs is it's just really hard to make star player trades in this league. It's hard to move guys with heavy cap numbers. And it's especially hard even if you're some of these places and you're deciding to absorb some of the cap hit without insanely high return on that.
Yeah.
And so I just felt a little frustrated. We should be able to watch Erik Karlsson not finish his career with the San Jose Sharks, hoping and praying that some place doesn't end up stealing him eventually because it gets to the point finally where San Jose goes, yeah, whatever, we'll eat the money and just give us a bunch of prospects and we'll try to reboot this thing.
Yeah.
Two, we need more McDavid. He was one of the only guys that actually interacted with Biz well.
Mm-hmm.
He just has a bit of personality with him. He's clearly a hockey guy. There's no doubt about it, right? Like the forced laughter stuff he struggles with, like Nate Bargatze, a professional comedian, is making fun of him, and you can just see he's in the torture chamber going, ah, oh, God, don't involve me in this. Pick anyone but me for this. But you know he's not afraid to say stuff when things are happening.
Yeah.
And it's still beyond me a little bit how the NHL hasn't figured out a better way to market him or to put him forward-facing and yeah, like he's got a couple of commercials now. Great. And everyone loves the Oilers and thinks that they're phenomenal. And yeah, McDavid had a pretty decent speech that I caught half of at least. I went, oh, right. I have to turn mute back off for a second here and watch McDavid speak. And he talked about how Edmonton is a destination. I went, yeah, because you're there. Mm-hmm. So people want to play with you because you're the best player on the planet. Anyways, we need more of him. Other hockey news. Now the Nylander talk has really kicked off. Twitter, hockey Twitter, Leafs Twitter is heavily debating how much money William Nylander should get based on reports that he wants something around $9 million a season. Okay. To be honest, Nylander, if he's asking for $9 million, that's the best case scenario if you're a Leafs fan. He's not trying to take them up over to 10 after a career season, after a year where he could actually put a little leverage in and say, I was one of the only guys in the playoffs that actually managed against the Panthers to step up, show out, and impose myself on some of these games. I would say Nylander's Q rating amongst Leaf fans right now is probably higher than it's ever been before. There are still those that remain a little frustrated with him. There's still, I think, an uneasiness about paying him a huge contract because of the way he plays and the way that he can disappear at times. There's just no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the William Nylander business, is that you're always going to have times where, yeah, he leaves you wanting more because of the fact that he's a physical freak with all the talent in the world and the pedigree and all these different things, right? But if he's asking for around 9, that means you settle somewhere with an 8 number and it's more than 8.5. Great. Mm-hmm. You can get Nylander done on a deal like that. I think that you're pleased as punched if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm definitely doing that deal. My only thing is, I'd rather see him go after Matthews, and I'd rather see him on also a shorter term deal. But yeah, it makes more sense. If you're not, you got to be doing both things at once, right? If you're tree living, you're shopping him around, you're having discussions around the league, you're talking tonight on draft night, you're seeing what other teams will offer you, and you're making sure that there isn't something that you think can drastically improve your club, an offer that you cannot refuse, because the deal has never been just trade these guys for the sake of trading guys. It's always been, how do you materially improve your hockey team? And if there's nothing out there, then you don't end up doing it. You kick the can down the line. But that's the thing. All of a sudden, having Nylander on a 7-year deal that's $8 million, he's going to be just as valuable come deadline time or the year after. The problem is if you end up capitulating on a no move and put yourself in a position where he has a lot of leverage, which is likely for a player of his ilk, likely for a player like him who has been performing the way that he has. But still, to me, tree living can't repeat the mistakes of the past. He's got to get Matthews done first. Matthews needs to get done first, and Matthews needs to be the one that actually says, I've got the priority of taking less, like we talked about yesterday with Bourne, where he does not take the $14 million contract over 4 years, where he takes anything less than 13.5, right? 13.5 is somewhere 13.
Yeah.
If you could do the 13.4, so there's a 34 for you, all cute like that, that's kind of the max. That's kind of the max, bro. So that you're sending the message down to the rest of the team that you are that you're hoping that something is going to change with the organization, that you're hoping that the mentality is not, hey, it's us four guys trying to get as much as possible and we'll figure out the rest around us. It'll be easy. It'll be fine. I really, really think that that's still the most important thing this offseason, but it still does feel like Nylander is the most likely to be traded out of all the guys. Anyway, we'll get some of this stuff over the next couple of days because NHL trades are happening. Feels like a little bit of a lull in NBA trade time. We had all the buildup for the draft. Draft wasn't as sexy as I hoped, right? Watching money get moved around with Rashawn Holmes, I was like, yeah, right. $22 million of, was it $22 million for Bertens?
Yeah, something like
there's
that.
A lot of money to move back 2 picks for the, you know, once.
Our boy.
Yeah, the Latvian miracle. It was tough.
Hey, I still think he can shoot.
Tough when you're the bad contract. Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo. Good morning. Thanks for doing this, man.
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm good, dude. We're quickly approaching. Friday, I think, is the time where we get to see the NBA is weird, right? We get the now you can sign with a team, but it's not official for a few days thing, but we open up on Friday. I'm going to start with a few little Raptors pieces before we move into some greater NBA stuff, because yesterday it comes down that OG Anunoby is leaving Clutch Sports, which feels a little odd considering Clutch's power in the league. What does this mean, if anything, to you?
I want to use my words carefully because I know that the Raptors fan base and Twitter army has been very sensitive about my OG Anunoby reporting lately. But I'll say, like, he's definitely been taking meetings with other representation for several weeks now. And I've seen in those conversations with potential new representation has been how to play his situation, in that he's got, you know, a contract expiring next summer. He is extension eligible, and the new rules now allow you to get a little bit more money than previously. But at the same time, with all this looming, you know, potential of Wilfred VanVleet stay or go, Pascal Siakam's name back up in trade talks, like, for OG Anunoby to stick around in Toronto and be content and happy, he still does want a bigger role than has been provided to him on offense in past seasons. So from my understanding, he kind of has been like seeking counsel from other areas outside of Clutch Sports to figure out exactly how to navigate his position moving forward. I don't know what his conclusion is yet. I haven't heard which agency he's pinpointed. So that could suggest also like what pathway he'll choose. But that's really all I have to kind of provide some context there.
Well, one, don't worry about Raptors Twitter, all right? There's nothing you can do. There's nothing any of us can do other than unless you tweet the Raptors of the Raptors are the GOAT. That's it. That's the only tweet that works. That people are like, yes, thank you for this. We will not push back at all. Or actually, this is a good one for you if you ever want to ingratiate yourself. Just say the Raptors don't get enough respect as an organization. And then you'll basically get, I would say, at least a couple of weeks of reprieve from angry Raptors Twitter. It's interesting, though, because, you know, you leave your management. That is usually a sign of, hey, I'm not happy with things. And you go, okay, you're not happy with things. You're here in Toronto, and we've heard that for a while now. Like, this is nothing new. I remember talking to Windhorst like a full year ago where he was talking about the initial round of Portland rumors, right? What ended up being the Shaedon Sharpe pick of, hey, listen, he wants more. He wants a greater role. And at some point, if you're in this whole mix of, hey, run it all back, bring everybody back, and now you're adding a first-round pick and Grady Dick, who you would assume is going to be someone that plays right away, like, it does come down to more than just the money. It does come down to the role. And we've been sort of sold this idea that OG Anunoby really cares about Toronto, or that, you know, he Masai, that there's some kind of connection with these two. But if we do see a scenario where Fred VanVleet re-signs, do you think that makes it more likely he stays, or more likely that he's actually one of the guys that they start to shop? Because they have to move money, and they also have to satisfy the rest of the parties with, yeah, the touches.
So entering draft week, the word around the league, and this is from, you know, rival teams getting the impression after all the Raptors trade conversations, team after team was telling me that the Raptors were at least giving off the impression that Pascal was the player they were hoping to move the most. And the Hawks were the one team that I really was hearing consistently. You know, there were some whispers about the Rockets, but I think that stuff might have faded after James Harden's potential reunion has seemed to fade there too. And, you know, the word there has also been that Siakam, you know, him facing a potential lucrative extension here this summer, he doesn't really have a big appetite to move elsewhere either. So there's been some back channel signaling going on about whether or not he'd be willing to sign an extension in certain places. So I think with all that being said, to your point, like if one or Fred or Pascal isn't out of the Raptors equation, this is just me connecting all the dots. I don't want to speak for OG Anunoby directly here, but I would be surprised if both those guys are back, that with the addition of Grady Dick, like you're saying, and you know, there still continues to be the thought that the Raptors want to move Scottie Barnes into more and more ball handling opportunities, similar to Siakam has had over the past couple of seasons. It would be difficult to see OG Anunoby back in Toronto with like a huge smile on his face about being, you know, the fourth banana again to Scottie and Fred and Pascal. So, yeah, I do think those are connected to some degree. I don't, again, it's early, Tuesday before free agency starting Friday is like an eternity, so a lot can happen here. Mm-hmm. I don't really know exactly how it will all play out, but the likelihood right now of one of those guys heading out the door at this juncture, it seemed like Fred VanVleet to Houston is probably the strongest possibility of either of those two guys leaving the Raptors.
Well, yeah, Houston just has an insane amount of cap space, and to the point where they're just linked to everybody, right? Like, it's just a you know where anyone could land? Houston, because they have all this cap.
Yeah.
So James Harden doesn't look like it's going to happen. That puts probably is Fred VanVleet Houston's number one target?
I believe so. I think they've got like a tiered ranking system where Austin Reeves is involved, and I don't really think Kyrie Irving is necessarily in play for them, mm-hmm. but Austin Reeves, Fred VanVleet, I've heard a bit of D'Angelo Russell, Gabe Vincent, I could see being an option for them as well.
If Fred does leave for Houston, Is it because a number just happens that Toronto can't match, or is it because, you know, he's looking for a new opportunity? Like, where are you at in terms of what Fred's priorities are in free agency?
I think money is going to be a massive factor for him in that undrafted guy who, you know, has made a hell of a living for himself, but you go back to entering the league as an older player on a rookie minimum type contract, his earning potential has been dramatically lower than what it would have been if he was a first round pick on, you know, a hot premium route to get a big second contract off these rookie scale deals. Like, you know, I mean, just name any single guy, right? Like, Cam Johnson's about to get a 4-year, $100 million deal at like a minimum, it sounds like. That's something that, you know, Fred couldn't get till his third contract. So I think, you know, it's been pretty clearly characterized to me, dating back to when he had his old representation at Parlay before he left to join Clutch, that he wants to be compensated like one of the best point guards in the league. And looking at Jalen Brunson sign a massive $100 million deal wasn't exactly an easy pill to swallow last year. So I do think, you know, if he can get to Houston on like a 2-year max or a 1+1 where he can just cash in, you know, a huge payday and then potentially get back out into the market next year or in 2 years, be up for another big deal before he's exited his prime, that does seem like a pretty plausible scenario for him.
Yeah, it just makes it seem harder and harder for Toronto for a lot of the reasons that we've been kind of talking about, which is they do have a bit of a roster imbalance in terms of trying to figure out who's going to end up being, yeah, the end of game guy or who's going to be where on the hierarchy. They've got their own tax situation that they're going to have to worry about. And yeah, with taxes, I hate to be so cliche with this, but yeah, it's going to be hard to match Houston given that they have so much money, but also a tax rate that's far more competitive than Toronto's. Like, if this is all about money for him, or at least in, you know, as the main portion of this, I just, it makes it harder and harder for me to understand what Toronto's offer to Fred VanVleet is going to be that's going to make sense for him. Do you think Toronto would do a similar thing, though, like that you're outlining, which is, hey, you get the 1+1 or the 2-year big max contract, but not go on term? Or do you think that the Raptors would want to have him locked into a longer deal?
So I do think there's absolutely still opportunity for him to stick around. And someone familiar with Fred's thinking told me that as much yesterday. The number that, I mean, it's been written in other outlets as well that I keep hearing that the Raptors know they're going to have to surpass is 390. So are we looking at, you know, 3-120? That'd be to your point about getting that number. I feel like that might be a little rich for Toronto's blood. I don't know the cap that they're willing to go, but I think that the Raptors, from all accounts, are very much on the understanding they're going to have to exceed $30 million in average annual value to keep Fred around.
Yeah, for those who, quick math, 3-120 is 40 a year. That's a lot for Fred VanVleet. That's going to be met with some interesting opinions, I would say, if it gets into that number. Okay, so if Fred does leave, if he does leave, it puts Toronto in a weird position where, like, they don't have a ton of salary cap space, but also they desperately need a point guard, even if they do try to sell Scotty Barnes as the guy. Is there a name out there that you think that they're linked to? Like, D'Angelo Russell is working out in Toronto, which is a bit of an oddity. I haven't been able to figure out as to why he's doing that. But, yeah, do you read anything into a situation like that? Or are there any point guards you think Toronto would target if he does end up leaving?
I don't read into where guys work out. Like, I forget who the player is off the top of my head, but there's someone working out in Cleveland right now, like at the Cavs facilities, who's not a Cavs player, but just because, like, he's a local guy. It might be Larry Nance off the top of my head. But it doesn't really matter. Just to say, like, you know, local Philly guys go work out at the Sixers practice facility. There's no local ties to D'Lo in Toronto. So to your point, I don't really know what's happening there, but I wouldn't necessarily read into it. I think, you know, other targets for the Raptors, I mean, right now, the large majority of Raptors' conversation has been, what are they going to do about retaining Fred? And if they do lose him, will there be some potential sign-and-trade opportunity to get him somewhere outside of Houston? Because any other suitor, pretty much, you know, the Orlando stuff, I think, has pretty much died out, even though I do think there was real possibilities there at a point in time. But then Markel Fultz had a good year. Cole Anthony's had a good year. They draft another point guard, Anthony Black. To get into the Lakers or another winning situation, they're going to have to find a sign and trade. Maybe that is D'Lo trying to be in the radar and show himself and say, I would be in Toronto, take me back in a sign and trade type thing. I don't know. The other conversation about the Raptors, though, has just been about Jakob Poeltl. And look, when you give up a first-round pick for someone at the trade deadline as their expiring contract, usually you have an idea of the ballpark range salary that they're looking to achieve there. I had heard some rumblings that maybe that wasn't as obvious of a reunion or as a return as it seemed on paper. But as we get closer this week, it does seem like Poeltl will be back somewhere around $20 million, and that's been his asking price pretty much all year that was floated around to potential teams that were going to trade for him.
Yeah, so what we're talking about right now is potentially $60 million a year for Fred VanVleet and Jakob Poeltl. Yeah.
And I don't think the Raptors are going to go up that high. That's, you know, the upward ballpark, but, you know.
This is done today deal, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the, the negotiation is over. We're floating you $40 million a season, Fred. And he's like, yep, don't worry, I'm here. There's no more flirting with any other place. I'm a Toronto Raptor. I'm a very happy Toronto Raptor. Either way, do you feel like, yeah, at least the, so Poeltl, Raptors feel like heavy favorites, and they have to be. Like, the optics of losing a first and then having Poeltl walk, like some people we had on the show last week talking about his potential to go back to San Antonio with Mark Stein, and I went, I don't think that there could be anything more embarrassing than that happening to Toronto. San Antonio winning the lottery in a year where people wish that they tanked, getting a first-round pick from the Raptors and then signing Poeltl. It almost gets the Kawhi trade done. It's like that's nothing happened between these two organizations. But do you view the Fred thing then as just pretty much, hey, it's down to Houston and Toronto?
That is probably an oversimplification, but yeah, in my mind, those are the only real options I'm connecting for him on the board right now.
So the other part of it that you mentioned is the Siakam stuff. And yeah, you've had him linked to Atlanta. Do you think that the John Collins trade, which finally happens after years and years and years of speculation, does that make a Hawks Siakam trade more or less likely?
You know, it's hard to piece together because the Hawks are doing and talking about so many different things that a lot of them are counterintuitive to each other. And that's not to say that the Hawks are all over the place and they're not doing a good job. I just think they have a lot of different balls in the air that it's kind of hard to draw a straight line through what they're trying to achieve. And at this point, it does seem like DeJounte Murray is more than likely headed back to the Hawks on an extension. Moving Collins' money will give them both playing time for Sadiq Ben and Yeka Okongwu, but also the opportunity to come to extensions with those guys. And DeJounte was, I don't know what the Raptors' interest in him was, but he was at least the name that I believe was involved in trade talks for Siakam with Toronto. But all indications are that Siakam has at least with the Hawks and maybe even around the league indicated he's not really thrilled about signing an extension outside of Toronto. So I don't know what the viability of him being dealt to Atlanta really is because of that. And also, with all these cost-saving moves that the Hawks are considering with moving DeAndre Hunter potentially to Indiana or Detroit or just like they did with John Collins, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense to go trade for someone who's past 30 or, you know, exiting his prime, who's going to be commanding a max contract over $40 million. They got this big trade exception out of the Collins deal, but bring on Siakam just doesn't seem to mesh with the other things on their board right now.
Yeah. The only thing about Siakam making it essentially public that he wants to sign in Toronto, which again makes sense. He's lives here. He makes a ton of money here. I know that there's a lot of Raptors fans still going, this is so refreshing. And finally someone wants to be here. I'm like, well, other guys did want to be here. DeRozan wanted to be here. This isn't completely unprecedented, but yeah, he gets more money if he's here too. But how could this not affect his position from a leverage standpoint with the Raptors? Like, if he's saying he's not willing to go somewhere else because he really wants to sign the extension here, like, yeah, how does that not affect his leverage when it comes to an extension?
I see your point. I mean, a lot of the logic that teams and players and representation use at this time of year is something I can't explain. And, you know, I'm not saying they're handling this the wrong way, but everyone's got their own motivations. Everyone's got their own finger on the pulse, and sometimes they know things that we don't. Like, oh, well, if we just continue to do this, then this will happen here and that'll happen there. So I never try to really explain or, like, dissect the calculus of what certain, you know, positionings are in terms of leverage and negotiating stuff, because I've never actually been in a room, right, where we're trying to talk dollars and cents or trying to make a deal happen. And, you know, we don't always know all the options that are on the board. So I always try to kind of reserve judgment in those scenarios.
Okay, so are we done with Damian Lillard stuff? Is it resolved now after he and Joe Cronin met and the statement goes, I met with Dame and Aaron Goodwin this afternoon. We had a great dialogue. We remain committed to building a winner around Dame, end quote. Are we done?
We're not done, but I'll tell you, like, the way the Raptors or the Blazers, excuse me, are handling the Dame situation is very similar, even though they're very different in that Dame has not requested a trade yet. But it's really analogous to how the Nets handled Kevin Durant's trade request about an hour before free agency dropped last year, where Brooklyn kind of looked around and said, look, dude, you're on a 4-year contract. Like, we don't have to trade you. We're going to keep making moves. We're going to try to build out a contender around you, keep you happy, and we'll hope you'll, you know, change your mind, which is what Durant ended up doing. And they kept him around for like 6 more months before Kyrie's contract thing kind of blew that whole thing up. And then they end up tearing apart their team at the deadline. You know, the Blazers are going to see an approach. I think this is exactly what they told Dame in that meeting. This is what they've kind of been projecting around the league dating back to the, you know, pre-draft stuff, that, like, even if they didn't trade the number 3 pick, you know, they have plans to re-sign Jeremy Grant, and there's other moves they're going to try to make in free agency, whether that's, you know, with trade or what other sign and trade creativity that they can come up with. They're looking at this as like a, you know, a multi-week window to try to show Dame that they can build a team around him that can compete for a championship. But does that mean come July 15th, when summer league's winding down and I'm flying home ready for a vacation, that he could request out, or Portland could decide we got to move him, just like Utah all of a sudden, like, reversed course on Donovan Mitchell last year? I'm definitely prepared for that scenario mentally.
I guess obviously he's not he's a infinitely more important player than Jordan Poole. But, we did get that quote from Dunleavy a couple of days ago where he was, yeah, he's very important. We plan for him to be here to the end of the contract. And then, yeah, he's dealt, what, 24 hours later, 48 hours later, somewhere in that ballpark. So I don't know. I guess I don't really want to be doing the Dame rumors all summer if there is really a desire to keep him there. It's really hard to see what you mentioned there, which is how they build this winner around him, how things materially change unless they're willing to move off of some of those young guys, which, yeah, I don't really see that happening either. Okay, so a guy that I can't stop thinking about because he's Canadian and he's a wild card is Dylan Brooks. Because he's clearly at least good, right? Can we just say he's decent? He's fine? Yes, like... And it feels like he's probably is he going to go under market value? Is someone going to get a bargain on him? What is Dylan Brooks's value to you right now?
No, by all accounts, he is very likely going to be headed to Houston. I don't know value in don't know, but him, Fred VanVleet, and Brooke Lopez, through all the noise, those have been the most consistent names, and it's also been communicated to me pretty clearly that the Rockets are looking at, they want one point guard, they want one veteran point guard, they want one veteran wing player, and they want one veteran center. So those seem to be, like, across the board, the top three choices, or their top choices at those three spots. So with Brooks, I mean, Detroit was supposed to be a potential opportunity for him. I don't see that anymore. They're getting linked to Cam Johnson, Draymond Green, and DeAndre Hunter, and I mean, the board right now for agency is kind of crowded, not just Houston. Like, that's kind of my story that should be coming out in the next hour or so. Yahoo's kind of going to touch on that. But there's all these ripple effects and domino effects, just like every summer. But, you know, the Pacers can't bring in every single power forward to their starting lineup too, you know. So to bring it back to Brooks, Houston does seem like the place for him. The value of him, to your question, I would expect he gets – somewhere around $15 million in average annual salary, like give or take a couple million. But I really don't have as clear of an answer on that number figure as like with Fred. I've been told pretty unequivocally for him to go there, it's going to take the full, you know, 2-year, $80 million max.
It's interesting with Brook Lopez because, yeah, I understand why Houston would want him if they're trying to, you know, vaunt into being a winner. And he was amazing last season. But, yeah, he's 35 years old. And when Milwaukee lost to me, I kept thinking, okay, well, they're probably going to be able to run this back, and that's the only thing that they're going to end up doing. And now all of a sudden, you know, maybe he departs. Chris Middleton, obviously, a free agent. They got Joe Ingles, who's a free agent. What's going to happen here in Milwaukee? Like, how many of these guys are they going to be able to retain, and how do they pivot? Because, yeah, they still have Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I would imagine that they don't feel as though they have a winner around him if they end up losing a couple of those pieces.
Yeah, I do need to make a couple more calls on the Bucks ancillary guys because I'd heard nothing about Jay Crowder, for example, and then, you know, yesterday there was a couple of, oh, Jay Crowder could go here, Jay Crowder could go there. So, you know, but with the big ticket numbers, the big ticket guys like Chris Middleton, I do expect to go back. Brooke, I think, is a little bit more of a question of he does seem to be being tugged and pulled in both directions of Portland, of Houston, and sticking around in Milwaukee. And the numbers with him and the contract details with him are kind of similar. I expect he'll end up being thrown like another 2-year balloon contract from Houston. That seems to be their plan, like to give these kind of massive short-term balloon numbers that can make a player's eyes bulge and potentially, you know, have the rival team that's trying to retain or sign that player kind of balk at that number figure.
Is there a team this week as we, like, right before we actually head into this, that you think has an added amount of pressure to make something happen that you're really watching when it comes to the trade market?
Added amount of pressure. I mean, the pressure, I think, is on any team that fell short that thinks they still have a shot in this wide-open league. So, I mean, do the Sixers have something creative up their sleeve to add a little bit more to this group, not just bringing back James Harden? I mean, they're certainly – their fan base and that whole city is very eager to see something happen after the team did not acquire a draft pick and just signed a couple of two-way guys. I mean, Miami, I think they're in an interesting spot, being that they obviously overachieved by incredible, you know, accounts to make the finals out of the play-in tournament. They're this Damian Lillard, you know, destination. But, like, what if Dame doesn't request out? What if the Heat just end up having to look back at, you know, this offseason and their biggest decisions are re-signing Gabe Vincent and Max Strus, which could become very difficult depending on what those guys can elicit elsewhere. And it'd be a tough look for the Heat to make this finals run, have all this momentum, think they could get Damian Lillard, and then they don't get Dame and lose one of those two key starters for their finals run. That'd be a tough pill to swallow, I think.
Yeah, that was – Miami was one of the three for me. I just looked at them and said, them and Sacramento, it feels like you got to do something, right? Like, you're going to have to shake something up one way or another.
I don't think the Kings have, like, pressure, though, because the Kings are playing with half money, man. Like, they made the playoffs for the first time in, you know, almost two decades. They're going to have $25 million in space. I think they are going to be a big player here. I don't know exactly who – their target is. I'll leave a tease in that there's a couple of options I'm going to list in my next story that comes out today. After renegotiating and extending Domantas Sabonis, they're going to have upwards of $25 million still to make a play. So could that be, you know, a massive marquee guy here in this summer? Like, potentially, but they're going to have just as good a chance as any good team to really improve here.
Read Jake's latest today. It's going to go up. Yahoo, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports, Jake Fisher. Always appreciate the time, man. Thanks for coming on today.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Take care. There goes Jake Fisher. Okay, so a couple quick things off of what he had to say. One, we've been hearing the OG smoke now for quite some time.
Yep.
I think that we can safely say the guy wants more.
Yeah.
Yes.
My only thing to him would be, if I'm the Raptors, I'm going, look at some of these offers you're getting. Like, I don't want to involve you personally with maybe some of this, but let's just say some of the rumors out there that you're worth 3 first-round picks plus a prospect plus the, like, the OG offerings seem to be massive for him on only a 1-year deal. So these places want to already pay him. They want to make sure that gets done. So you go, obviously your value has not been drastically affected by the fact that A, you know, you've been hurt throughout your career. And B is that as much as we have given you an opportunity to do more, like, yeah, some of his isolation stuff hasn't exactly improved, but the role that he's been in so far with the Raptors has not materially changed his value around the league. And he deserves a lot of credit for that because, you know, he's arguably the best, most impactful defensive player in the NBA. I actually think that he is. Like, I made this point last year when it was Depoy. Yeah, fine, whatever. It's a team award. And but the idea that Brook Lopez has more impact defensively than OG Anunoby in a basketball game is outrageous. Like, I'm sorry. I don't care what stats you show me about rim protection. Getting to hang out behind Giannis Antetokounmpo and Drew Holiday
over and over
in
again.
Drop coverage. Yeah, like, okay. I'm pretty sure OG
farming
could do that.
In the paint.
Yeah. The East all of a sudden does change pretty drastically, though, with the Giannis stuff.
The Milwaukee stuff?
Well, yeah, just the idea that, like, Jay Crowder could leave and Ingles could leave and they don't have... It's not exactly the free agent destination of choice. Not exactly a place where they have a lot of assets or money to change their team up. They kind of need Chris Middleton to go back, and he sort of look washed.
For sure. Well, and if Lopez goes, like, I mean, that changes that entire...
Massively.
Like,
massively. I almost said he was huge for them last year. It's like, yeah, he was. The seven-footer who can score, hit threes, space the floor, and then also blocks... and protects the rim better than just about anybody in the NBA. Yeah, it's a pretty important player to have. But just if you're the Raptors and you're trying to talk yourself into this whole run it back thing, the surroundings have to matter to you to some degree. You have to go, hey, Boston just brought in Kristaps Porzingis. Yeah. They have him and Robert Williams. Those two guys are made of paper mache. it could rain one day and they lose both guys. Jaylen Brown is what, one cold streak away from wanting a trade request?
Back to Atlanta?
Just if you're the Raptors, you're kind of going with that. You're saying, hey, Miami, they might not get Damian Lillard. They may have struck out, and last year might have been a fluke, and now you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, and they've taken a step back. I'm not saying I agree with this logic. I don't think that the Raptors are suddenly going to be a title contender. And although, again, they do, if they keep OG, maybe that's what they're thinking, is he's the best Jokic defender in the NBA. They go, we just get there with OG. We're in this thing, baby. Actually, you know what? I talk myself into it. Raptors contenders.
You just heard it, everyone. Live on air, JD just talked himself into contenders. The East
stinks bad. Who cares if Fred wants $40 million? No, but again, Jake, that's pretty clear there. I don't think that you should get confused. Is he wants $40 million from the Houston Rockets to go there.
Yes.
He's saying, I want $40 million untaxed. And if they are willing to go there on a 2-year contract, it makes it impossible for the Raptors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't match it.
No.
They can't match what Houston has to offer at the very top. We have taxes here. The taxes. You got to pay the taxes. And it's just non-sustainable for the Toronto Raptors to pay Fred VanVleet $40 million. The interesting one still, too, secondarily, remains the stuff with Jakob Poeltl. Because, okay, clearly he's coming back. But it's hilarious the position they put themselves in with him.
Bizarre.
He's obviously going to command good money around the NBA. I don't know. Maybe it was risky to let him stay in San Antonio, even if you were going to try to poach him, considering... They've got Wembanyama. They would have had all the cap space they have, maybe more incentive to keep him, offer him more money. But man, oh man, oh man, the idea that you traded a first round pick for him, it resulted in nothing. And then you are over a barrel in negotiations as any offer he gets floated his way. He goes, yeah, actually, up the money, up it.
As soon as I saw that story leak out, like again in the last week or so, I was like,
you mean
how?
From this show?
Mark Stein.
Oh yeah, yeah, but I mean, like when it was floating around, I found it so weird that it was out again. know. Because, like, if you make that trade, you just assume that you're going to lock him up. You've traded a first-round pick for him. You got to know that you're going
to
lock him up.
He'd be thrilled to be here.
Yeah.
That he would just be doing cartwheels.
I just assumed that was done.
And then it was, these were the two reports. One was that he didn't want to be a part of a rebuild, so he was calling shots.
Yeah.
And then two is that he wanted over $20 million.
Over the $20 million.
You went, oh.
Yeah.
I got to say, would have been a lot better if Toronto had just not traded for Thad Young and kept that pick and had Walker Kessler on a rookie contract and their first round pick next year. That's just my thing. That's what I say.
That's what you say.
Yeah. I still don't understand them trading the first round pick. Again, everyone's so excited about Grady Dick right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, everyone's thrilled.
The vibes are flying high.
Yeah.
TikTok's
it's a
flying
new
high.
Raptors player. And guess what? This is the way that this organization needs to build, is through the draft and accumulation of good players. Part of the reason why they're reluctant to trade OG and Siakam is that they have real players that they drafted and developed here.
Yeah. That's why they hired Darko. Had a hand in player development.
All right. We'll see. But yeah, something's got to give here. They re-signed Fred. That's what I'm taking away from this.
Mm.
That they'd like for Siakam to be the guy that moved, but the suitors are going to start to, it's tough. Because the two places that seemingly are interested in him, Portland and Atlanta, they're not exactly, don't worry, he's going to absolutely re-sign here, destinations.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, not easy. Maybe Sacramento, though. But
Sacramento's a destination for Siakam.
Yeah, when Jake's talking about different places that could be in play and get aggressive using their cap space over the next little while, maybe they're a place that just goes, dude, we're still in California.
Yeah.
And we've got a competitive team, and we'll pay you.
Mm-hmm.
Come play with Domantas Sabonis, who's going to feed you the rock all the time.
Yeah.
And
De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, come play pick and pop with De'Aaron Fox. We can be a contender right away. Maybe. I got to tinker with that one in the trade machine. Anyways, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. I'm livid with the Texans, the Texas Rangers. That was a deplorable performance yesterday. They went up 1-0, and I was like, here we go, here we go. Easiest bet of the year. And then Andrew Heaney. I'm so glad the Jays didn't sign you. Oh, my God. Have more conversations, you and your wife, about almost Toronto. Never we're going to Toronto because it's kind of a bum. He got lit up by a bunch of Detroit Tigers who I went, I've never heard of this guy before. Oh, who's this? Hitting their first home run of the year against you, Andrew Heaney?
Andrew Heaney.
Cost me money. Disgusting. So we're going to try to do better with the Betano Best Bet next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, so I'm going to the Jays game tonight. So obviously, I'm going with my boy, Chris Abbott, who's with Betano. So it's Betano night at the ballpark. So there's going to be plenty of bets. So I'll probably tweet out or post later what the full card ends up being. I almost jinxed it. I almost jinxed everything. Because I was, no, not you.
Oh, sorry.
This isn't your fault, finally, Joe.
Okay,
look at, see how beaten Joe is today?
I'm so beaten
sorry,
by that.
Yeah, sorry,
every
Joe.
Tuesday
Joe just
is
put
my
his
nightmare.
Hands up like, please don't hit me anymore.
We've got him on his heels.
Dude, every Tuesday is a nightmare. It's brutal.
No, we won last Tuesday.
That's true, we did.
It was not related to that. I was just going to speak about certain things in terms of bets that shall not be spoken. As to avoid any curses. I know I burn sage before I have to go down
to
the ballpark
to
tonight.
Space.
So we still don't have Gausman props up yet, but I am curious to take a peek at those when they do come out. I think that there's at least a little bit of value on. I'm going to be betting the Blue Jays money line tonight. Probably not the run line. I don't have that much faith in them. But I'll probably end up taking that if it ends up being Gausman. It's -150, which is right now kind of where it's sitting on Betano. So, yeah, by the way, this is Betano Best Bets, all right? Betano, the 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year, the only sports book I use. And, yeah, if you're heading down and you want to place a little wager tonight, just hit me up. Hit me up if you want to play on Betano. I'm telling you, it's an amazing book. It's an excellent book. There's everything that you need right here. Like I said, the cleanest, best sports book that I've ever used. Okay, so I'm doing something that I really don't want to do, but I have to do.
Oh, no.
Yeah. going back to Rangers minus 1.5. It's the same logic, okay? No, here's why. The Rangers are throwing another lefty out there. And Detroit yesterday, that was like the first game of the year that they mashed a lefty. Okay, so I'm willing to take the punishment and be embarrassed if this loses again. But I cannot believe, you remember when the Jays lost to Oakland last week? What did old JD do? He didn't even bet on that first game, but I went, they're not losing two in a row to this. And they stacked the bet builder because they were going to hammer them the very next day. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen here. I love Texas. The Rangers are a much better team. Ride the Rangers, not two in a row. Minus 1.5 on Betano Sportsbook. Let's head over to the podcast portion of the show and do a little bit more there. All right, welcome to the podcast portion of the show. Subscribe and review, leave 5 stars. And yeah, hit me up anytime if you are a podcast listener. I got a decent amount of the poster hits yesterday, which was nice. Yeah, it was good.
Well, got some
people sharing some good posters. I appreciated that. But the most important thing is I actually thought about lies. Because you guys asked me about lies I've been caught in.
We did.
And I am now remembering when... There used to be a time in Simon and I's lives, Joe, where not everyone carried a computer in their pocket. They just carried a flip phone that had, you know, maybe takes grainy pictures.
Yeah. I'm appalled.
And was frustrating to text with. And during that time, you could lie to ladies about who you were and what you did.
Goodness.
It hit me the second I left the studio and I got on. I went, oh, my God. Because, yeah, I don't have a lot of embarrassing getting caught in lie stories. I just don't.
True.
But I did remember a time where, yeah, when I was in university, and it's hilarious to look at pictures of me in university that I would try to float some of these things out. You didn't want to just be some young dork from university. You want to be somebody else, right? So you know, every once in a while you'd take a shot and be somebody else and wear the hat. You know what, I feel bad for you guys that you don't ever get to do that. You don't ever get to pretend to be somebody else.
We don't really have that.
You can't. We were doing catfishing, but in your face.
Yeah. It was a unique new form of catfishing.
Yeah, exactly.
Catfishing in your face.
No, it was. It was like, I am a professional who has a job and a house. People will go, why are you bringing me back to a dorm? Let's go to your house. I'm having renovations done.
I'm redoing my kitchen.
Yeah.
I'm redoing my kitchen.
So yeah, I remember there were a few times where, you know, you try to be talking to a lady, talk yourself up. I may have once or twice said while I was an undergrad student to better looking women than I should have ever been talking to that, you know, I was a lawyer or that I was from a different country.
I was about to ask, good, like, what was the popular job that you would pick when you
were lawyer?
Lawyer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just finishing
what
up law school.
What kind of lawyer?
No, I was finishing up law school. Oh, it's criminal defense attorney.
Of course. Exactly. Okay. I was hoping you were going to say that.
What are you talking about?
I was a patent lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe. No. I was gearing up for a very serious career. I was a somebody. I wasn't taking an undergrad in law and skipping a lot of classes to try to run a fledgling party promotions business. Certainly not that.
Of course not. No.
No, not that at all. I was a serious person. No, but there was definitely, I would say, some of the cringiest stuff of my entire life was trying to convince girls that you were from a different country. And I tried that a couple of times.
That's tough.
And that was, looking back on that, not great.
Definitely
got caught lying doing that a couple of times.
See, I had done that as well. Bros. And the thing is like, there's a lot of questions that can be asked that you should have an answer to.
No, that's the thing. When you're drunk, you can usually, the drunk confidence, you think you're doing great.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm nailing this. Nobody knows. They all knew. And then all of a sudden you end up in a McDonald's where the lights are on and there people are sobering up at 3 a.m. And some other bro that's trying to hone in on your situation is like, you're not from there. And it sucks.
You're not from there.
Yes, I am. No, you're not. End of discussion. Kind of limp out of there. Let's just say this. I never closed the deal using a fake accent or story about being somebody else. Never worked out. Actually, that's not true. One time, kind of. Not with the accent, thank God.
Right.
The accent thing actually was, I used to be a tour guide when I was in grade 12.
Oh, nice.
I worked on the SS Klondike, which is a national historic site. So you'd give people tours of this old paddle wheeler, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's land docked or dry docked.
Right.
It's not on the river. I'm not there doing like a whole thing wearing a bow tie, right? From about the Yukon.
Oh, I wish I could have seen that.
No, yeah. No, it was anyways, but we would get bored and everybody was just like we were having a good time.
Right.
It was a lot of young people working this job. It was a great job too. It paid well. You know, you had good hours. It was a pretty easy job. You did a tour and then you got a break for a little while after the tour. Maybe you run the till. Maybe you're just in the office screwing around until the next tour starts up. A lot of tourism in the Yukon.
Mm-hmm.
But you get bored with doing the same tour over and over again.
Yeah.
So you start to throw things in. You start to do dares. And some of the dares would be accents.
Oh, nice.
And so that's where I would hone some of those accents that I would try later unsuccessfully on.
Which one did you get the most?
No comment.
Okay, no comment. Okay.
You're a pretty good accent guy, I think.
Yeah, yeah. No, I... Yeah.
Yeah.
As a, like, two-second joking around
accent
guy.
Yeah. Not as a
trying to drag it out over an entire tour. You want to talk about getting caught in lies? That definitely has happened before. Happened before. Definitely tried to do, like, Southern accent, Irish accent, you know, mix it up. But the beauty of it is, though, I did get away with it sometimes, and they would tip you more. They would go, oh, your story's
really?
So great. Yeah, wow, what a great story.
As an Irishman who's moved to the Yukon, what a great story.
Oh,
and is now teaching us about the Yukon.
I had to leave my family. I'm trying to make it here on my own.
Yeah,
it was
goodness.
Although when I do Ireland, I do a little bit more Lucky Charms than I do.
There are a couple of blue moons. And
that was before Conor
clovers.
McGregor, you know. Anyways, all right, let's hit some what we missed.
Well, I just wanted to get really quickly. Do you have any thoughts on Taylor Hall going to Chicago?
Yeah.
In that trade yesterday.
Good for Chicago, man. Mm-hmm. Taylor Hall still produced a lot last year, 5-on-5. And again, the Bruins were a wagon.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm Chicago, this is the way that I want to build, which is, hey, go grab a team that's in a tough cap situation, grab a talented player who's not at the end of his career, and put him around Connor Bedard right away. Don't just let him struggle.
A player who's not ridiculously expensive either. He's at $6 million for the next 2 years.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And if you're the Bruins, you hate losing Taylor Hall. Mm-hmm. But of course, the Bruins end up clearing a bunch of cap space, pivoting, and now look like they're front runners for Bertuzzi to re-sign him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people are like, oh, Taylor Hall, 5-on-5 points. And it's like, all right, cry. Tyler Bertuzzi, you'd rather have at this point than Taylor Hall, especially moving forward. So to me, the biggest thing that I keep thinking here is, I get it, you're going to be patient with Trey Living and go, yeah, it's a new job, but it's going to do something, you know? Maybe do something and make a trade. Don't just sit around. You're going to need to also, you're going to have to shuffle something up here.
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah. You're going to have to make trades to address some of this roster. I don't know how many guys they're going to be able to retain from free agency from their own group, or how many they should. Mm. Like, there's not, the more I think about it, there's the more guys I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much you want to, I love Noel Acciari. I crushed on him the entire time he was here. I don't know how much you want to pay him. Like free agency, I don't know how much you want to pay him. And what position does he play? What position does he play with your newfound team?
Yeah, that's true.
Like Luke Shen, same thing. Love Luke Shen. Part of Luke's troops. How much do you want to pay Luke Shen?
How much you want to pay him?
For sure.
How much you want to pay Luke Shen?
Much would you pay him?
Not a lot.
Like 1.5 over.
Look what happened to Mark Giordano this year.
Yeah, it's true.
These guys can look good and then they can age immediately.
Yeah.
And Luke Shen got to walk into a situation. We don't talk about this enough. Luke Shen walked into a scenario where he had his kid right away and he didn't have to play a bunch of games, and he came in as a seventh defenseman, and one game in, one game out, got to basically chill quite a bit before the playoffs. How many games did Luke Shen end up playing last year?
Let's take a look.
Yeah, let's have a quick peek on Luke Shen's games played and when they actually happened to be played, right?
Yeah.
Like, what did he play, 70 games?
Luke Shen,
70-something games, or low 70s?
70.
Yeah, okay, so there you go.
55 with Vancouver, 15 with Toronto.
Yeah, but also lower leverage, lower minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, he was sheltered heading into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to do with a player like that versus Gio, who they leaned on and who was one of their most important players on the blue line the first couple of months.
One who everyone was saying, like, oh, are they going to try to take the foot off the gas a little bit with Gio? Like,
right, but this is what I'm saying. If you're going to try to play Luke Shen with Morgan Rielly for a bunch of the year, and I'm guessing that if they keep Liljegren, they would run Liljegren out there for a pairing for a bunch, and that they would split him up and they wouldn't be pushing Luke Shen, 15-plus minutes a night.
Yeah.
But even still, it's a risky thing to be taking a guy who's my age
Yeah, his minutes last year, too. It's like 11, 13, 7, 13, 16, 12. And even in the playoffs, it went up by a couple minutes every game. But, yeah, it's not like he's playing 23, 24 minutes a night.
He turns 34 this year.
Yeah.
It's not ancient, but it's definitely like there's enough risk there for a capped-out team that – and as a perfect fit, great guy, good with Riley.
Luke's troops. Playoffs,
but yes, I'm saying you can't do more than a 2-year deal with Luke Shen. Mm-hmm. And I think that the number for me is probably lower than people would expect. Anyways, what else? What else are we doing?
John Collins, trade machine darling, finally moved.
Yeah.
Okay, thoughts on that? Here's the interesting here's the interesting thing to me about the John Collins stuff. All of a sudden, Utah has a lot of players.
Of guys,
they drafted 3 first-round picks this year, okay? I know a lot of us went to sleep at the end of the first round this year because it started to get boring.
Yeah.
But they took 3 guys in the first round. They took Taylor Hendricks, they took Keyonte George, and they took Bryce Sensabaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's 3 guys. Now you had John Collins, that's 4. Agbaji, that's 5 players. Jordan Clarkson, 6. Talen Horton-Tucker, 7. Walker Kessler, 8. Lauri Markkanen, 9. Kelly Olynyk, 10.
Yeah.
You know, Colin Sexton, 11.
That's a heavy rotation.
Yeah. All I'm saying here is it actually kind of feels like okay.
Gearing up for something?
I'll say this. I sort of screwed up my question for Jake Fisher. I sort of messed it up. I said pressure because I cracked under the pressure of asking a good question. But it was, who are you just keeping an eye on who, you know, feels like they're waiting in the wings to make a move? And that's why I brought up Sacramento. And he was like, yeah, they're not really under pressure. They made the playoffs. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, good point.
I'm Joe in the newsroom. I know. Whenever we make fun of him.
I get it.
It was jokes. Yeah. it feels like they've got the GM. They've still got picks. They've got all these guys. Mm-hmm. I just wonder what a team like Utah is up to now. And with the 3 first-round picks and grabbing
John Collins.
Collins. I have Jordan Clarkson's name right in front of me. And grabbing John Collins, all of a sudden their front court is pretty loaded with guys.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of forwards.
It's a lot of forwards. A
lot of forwards.
So what you're saying is, what's going on in Utah?
Yeah, just it feels like there's another shoe to drop. I don't know how everybody stays happy and how you're doing the proper player development with this many guys.
But how do you give everyone enough minutes?
Yeah, that's a lot of guys.
No, even, like I said, just think of the front court. John Collins is a front court player.
Yeah.
So you've got Kelly Olynyk, Lauri Markkanen, Walker Kessler, and now John Collins, and your first round pick this year in the lottery are all forwards who, are competing with minutes. 5 guys in your front court.
That's too many.
It is too many guys. Anyway, I would imagine if, I was doing favorites, that they probably move somebody like Kelly Olynyk, get a little younger, something like that. Because they're not moving Walker Kessler, and they're not moving Lauri Markkanen. Those two. And then, they just drafted Hendricks in the first round. And they just moved 4 Collins.
Yeah.
So those would be the 4 guys in. Even still, though, that's pretty competitive. I figure they're going to run some big lineups. They're going to run some wonky ones this year. Utah is going to be sneaky interesting. It's funny, though, with the Jazz, they've never had jerseys where it's easy to watch them. There's something about Utah where you watch them and you go, ugh, Utah.
Their current ones are so
bad. When the first gradient sunset one came out,
I didn't like those either.
I liked those ones back in the day.
I liked those ones.
I hated that team, though, because I was a big Sonics fan, and it was Karl Malone and John Stockton, and I liked Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, and I went, how dare you say these guys are better, even though they were.
But just go back to the throwbacks.
They definitely were for a much longer time.
Just use the mountains on the jersey. It's all you have to do. You don't have to do this weird vault.
You know what's a good
thing
is that, at the time, Payton and Kemp were like the punks, right? And people were like, look at all the kids Sean Kemp has. Look at all that trash Gary Payton talks. You got to want to be clean cut like Karl Malone and John Stockton, who now are like,
how the turntables.
Top dog weirdos. Karl Malone, those
top
takes.
Top dog weirdos.
Like, anytime the Jazz have like a veteran night or whatever, they got to be like, we got to bring these guys back again. Stuff.
No, you just got to go Hornacek every time.
Hey,
Jeffy! Jeffrey!
The only legend we have.
Well, that's the other thing, too. They had guys they had other players leave there in acrimonious ways. Like
Darren Williams, right? Yeah. He ran out Jerry Sloan, basically.
Yeah, he fought with Jerry.
Carlos Boozer left in bad terms, too, I'm pretty sure.
No, Boozer's a good guy. His high school.
Good guy?
Yeah.
It's like spray painted on hair.
I mean, it sucked. He actually was supposed to do an interview with me once, and I was all stoked to tell him stories about his high school whooping the crap out of mine right after he left. Anyway, yeah, and talk Alaska basketball and do all this stuff, and then he bailed last minute. I was like, Alaska guys!
Classic Alaska.
No,
guys.
Dude, Alaska and the Yukon is the most frustrating thing because they're, to us, the big dogs. We go up there and we have to just battle, right? Like, I still have
gotta battle.
There's a city in Alaska called Skagway, which is a tiny little town, but it's truly Friday Night Lights. Their team is even the Panthers, and they're blue and yellow.
Oh,
like
really?
The Dillon Panthers. Yes, 100%. And their whole town comes out to their basketball games. And despite being this tiny little Alaskan town, they are nasty. Like, every time you'd show up. And my senior year, we finally beat Skagway one year. I had a huge game. It's my most cherished memory. And guess what? With Alaska, they're like, we don't even think about you at all. They're the Don Draper. They're the Don Draper. We're nothing to them. Like, I've joked about this with different guys before. And Alaska is just like, who are you? The Yukon? No, that's not what we care about. So yeah, it's a tough position to be in. Anyways, what was the point of this? Nothing. We're all over the place. Anyway, keep going. What's next?
Really quickly, Steve Kerr, did you see this? He like met the Warriors draft picks and gave the weirdest handshake I've ever seen. He was going on like the x-axis, side to side.
Side to side handshake?
I was thinking I would be so weirded out if that was me in a handshake, and which got me thinking, like, do you got any handshake pet peeves?
It's a power
move,
Simon.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Simon. You didn't play over a decade in the NBA like Steve Kerr. You haven't been around basketball now for how many years, Steve Kerr now? Probably 40 years, 50 years in basketball. He's been doing handshakes forever. You are tall, awkward white guy. The first time a guy comes up, that's why you're just afraid of that moment happening, because you are going to look painfully uncool doing that. Same. Just so you know, I'm not saying I'm better than you. Okay. I'm just saying that you'll stand out more doing it than I will.
Because I'm a 6 foot four ginger.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Simon was 6'6" this morning.
he wanted to say fessing it. Up. He wanted to say 6'6".
Fessing up. I'll kill you. I'll murder you in cold blood. 6'4". I had to lie and say I was short, like 6'4". I don't have handshake pet peeves per se. I'm just not, the only thing I ever think of with handshakes like that is I can't believe people are that creative. I had some handshakes when I was in high school with a couple of like my best friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I still remember, actually, now that we're talking about this, practicing the Fresh Prince one with people. Oh. And then also like the up top and then the down low behind
the back,
right away.
Like, as you're walking away from each other.
Yeah. You got to practice that one. And then, yeah, lame doobie ones where you'd be like, and then we do a doobie. And you're like, ooh, spicy. So that people know we smoke marijuana.
Ooh.
Yeah, in cigarette form. How about that, authority figures? Pot really isn't badass anymore, eh? Kind of ruined it.
Yeah,
it was like really cool, and now it's everywhere. And I'm kind of like, ugh, don't smoke this much. Now I'm the old who's like, hey,
you've crossed.
Do
this
that
other
somewhere
side.
Private. Go to a dangerous trailer park to buy some crappy version of it in the middle of the night. Like, you should.
Meet that guy behind the houses in that alley.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you don't not quite sure his name, and you're not sure this is oregano.
Someone older than you.
Could be oregano.
And drive wherever they decide that you're going.
Totally safe.
Walk into these stores now, like, handed an iPad.
Yeah, it's an Apple store every time.
Here you go.
Can
iPad.
I see your ID?
it's actually
so funny how that's crossed. Like, Wii stores are now like Apple stores. You get like an iPad and pick your flavor out.
All right, what's next?
So we have a sequel to the Prince Harry and Meghan Markle thing. Remember last week we talked about their Netflix deal, $100+ million. Well, now they still have $66 million Canadian on the table, and they're not producing any new good ideas. They've only got half of their contract, and it's just at a stalemate. So I'm asking, if you had $66 million Canadian
these
on the table,
idiots who have just tried to max out their sob story, don't have any ideas outside of sob story. You mean these two aren't creative geniuses? Oh my
That's
god!
That's the whole report.
Again, imagine reading that book, that guy's book. Imagine going into a bookstore, the type of person who's like, the Prince Harry book is out today. I've got to get down to the bookstore so I can get the book written by Prince Harry. will be so interesting, full of uncut tales from this guy. No, I'm done with this. Like, it's easy. It's the number one layup. They're the... Are they... They're the most, like, non-political wise, right? Because there's people who are polarizing political figures, right? Yeah. Who people dunk on, right? And who people just get triggered about, like, you know... The safest people to dunk on non-political are these two, right?
Yeah, they're certainly up on the list. I mean, it's pretty easy.
Certainly very high. Pretty easy to dunk on, like, Kim Kardashian and stuff like that.
No, but Kim Kardashian is successful, cool, and...
I'm just saying, though, the Kardashians are, like, that's an easy target for some people.
It's not, that's not even the same ballpark. Sure, that's not even the same ballpark. Dude, okay, let's put it this way. Kim Kardashian shows up at an event, and people are like, holy crap, one of the most famous people on earth is here. Meghan Markle shows up at an event. People are like, oh, my God, she's here. We have to pretend, oh, hello, the Duchess or whatever, because she doesn't ever know. Anyway, yeah, I hate these two, and I think everybody else does. What's next?
I was about to ask if you had $66 million on the table. If, like, what show would you make? Like, do you have any, like...
You asking me just to pitch to you?
If you had $66 million,
if I had $66 million, I wouldn't be doing a show.
Yeah, that's right. Get out of here.
Yeah. If you're asking me what I would do if I had to do a show to get $66 million, I would have to do something from life experience that I could think of. Right. So I would either do like some kind of a comedy show about university and try to spin stories in there, and they'd be like, "Yeah, way funnier people than you have tried to do this." You know that? This is, your stories are trash compared to what we get through here, right? From professional writers. So yeah, I would try to do something like that, or something about like coming outside of university and being broke. And now I'm just like, that's workaholics, also better than what you did. Like, so yeah, something, but it would be something along those lines, or, you know, feeling the pressures of turning 30 years old, something along those lines. Like, you can't do a show around a radio sports guy. That's just not a show.
It's called Brockmire.
No, he's a...
Oh, he's a baseball announcer. Oh,
yeah, good show, though.
Yeah. It was always so funny. I used to work for a moving company for a little while, and they were like, we should have a show about us. I was like, no, we shouldn't.
I feel like every labor occupation
said
feels
that every
like...
Time at Costco, too.
Yeah, I know. That's it.
But they made Superstore, and that's actually a good show. So,
yeah, but I think our show would be boring, like, at work here. People are like, so we watching TV again? You're like, yeah, I'm watching TV. I'm watching the TV.
I'm watching the Blue Jays.
And I think about stuff.
30-second consecutive night.
And I take the stuff I see in my head brain, put it down in the laptop, and then the other guys see what I'm saying, and then we do the thing. Yeah, anyway, what's next?
Jets are going to be the team on Hard Knocks this year, JD. Is that making you more or less likely to watch it? I did like the Lions season last year. I'm kind of all in on seeing the Jets this year.
I don't want more of Aaron Rodgers.
Really?
Do you really feel as though there's more Aaron Rodgers to unearth?
Oh, like, man, getting I could up just, have you seen these quotes coming from the psychedelic conference he's been at? I could absolutely get down with this.
Honestly, I'd rather, you know what? I'd rather hang out with Prince Harry and read his book than hear more about Aaron Rodgers.
Are you on the pulse of the psychedelic conference?
I'd rather have Harry be like, and then my brother, he said, oh, I'm trying. He's Australian now.
We ventured a little. Aussie.
It's because I watched an Australian show over this week. It's actually not bad. It's on Amazon. It's called Lockhart. It's not bad. No, not maybe that. No, it's not Lockhart. Something else. Anyway, now, forget what it's called. Maybe it is Lockhart. Either way, it's like Australian.
The gears turn.
I'm a sucker for a murder mystery. Like anything where they're like, hey, there's a murder mystery. I'm like, I'll try this. I don't care. And this one's all right. This one was pretty decent so far. It's like a week to week one, though. So I hate that because I got to wait. Want to know who did it? No. Not a month from now. That's too far away.
So you have no thoughts on, you just don't want to see more Aaron Rodgers.
I think that they Sauce Gardner would clearly be the breakout star of this thing and be cool to watch him. I got nothing on this. I just don't want to see Rodgers do more lame Rodgers stuff and make it about him and have to have Hard Knocks basically design all these things. And Aaron Rodgers coming off of a season, he thought he'd be the grand. I was like, I don't need that. I'm kind of out on Hard Knocks. I loved it. I just, every year lately, it feels like this is now 3 years in a row. It used to be a show that I watched every single time religiously. Mm-hmm. It just feels like the last couple of seasons of it, it's not as super accessible either in Canada. It's not like
you get it a day later. That's
we get it a day later, and we also get, because it's such a weird thing. It's like, can we just get it at the time it comes out.
No team wants to do it anymore. Like every team this year was like declining left and right.
Like to Austin's point, I thought that the Lions, at least the clips that I saw from it, and yeah, they were quality. There was
they had a couple good personnel, like Dan Campbell and Jamal Williams were.
But that's for sure. They made you root for the Lions this year. I don't think that you're going to end up rooting for the Jets, and that kind of sucks. That the Jets are the team that you don't really want to root for because Rodgers, because Jets have had nothing. They had a couple of years where the Rex Ryan teams looked okay. They were better than okay. They were really threatening for Super Bowls.
Bart Scott can't wait.
Yeah, but outside of that, it's been a tough slog for Jets fans. Anyways, what's next?
Steph Curry documentary coming out.
Yeah, zero interest in seeing this. But I will say, like, my thought on this is, like, did you watch the Shaq one?
No.
Okay, the Shaq one is really good. But you know why? Because I love Shaq.
Yeah.
And so I think if you're a big mega fan of these guys, getting to see the documentary around them is cool. This just, all this makes me think of is how much more content is going into the micro audiences rather than.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, like The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, that's for everybody. Mm-hmm. I wonder how LeBron's going to end up playing his, because again, he's had camera crews following around for years and years, and eventually he's going to release that, and his is going to be fascinating. It's going to be really cool. Unfortunately, it will be just like The Last Dance where it's produced by him, but whatever. Whatever. He'll get to tell his story and there won't be a lot of pushback, and that's fine. But if I'm him, I don't want to release it in this era of like everyone getting a sports doc and it's showing up on Netflix and being gone in 3 days.
Yeah. But it's just this weird point where like everybody's getting one. And
But that's what I mean about the micro audiences. Yeah. There's enough people who love Steph Curry who are going to want to watch this. For you and I who work in sports, we're oversaturated with Steph Curry stuff for the last, you know, decade and a half. We're going, yeah, we don't care. Like we remember Davidson. You know, we watch sports. We track it. We remember his career. We know about the Timberwolves passing on him twice. It's not going to be a shocking thing for us to watch in the documentary. We're like, yeah, what you really want to follow? We've seen him in the match. Like we followed around the golf course before. He's got shows that he's been on with his wife. Like
what's that mini putt show that he has?
Oh, I have no idea. I didn't know that. I'm not aware of that.
I didn't know he had a mini putt show.
I didn't know that.
He's a big golfer, though.
Anyway, yeah, that's it. My point is that I don't think this is for us. I think that this is for the hardcore fan.
Mm. Oh, yeah, of which there are tons.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids love them.
Yeah.
Holy Moly is the golf show.
I hate that. So, that, next.
Well, I was going to ask, like, is there any athlete right now that you would want to watch a documentary? What would be your
current
top pick?
Current athlete?
Yeah, current athlete that's going to retire eventually. What's your top pick for wanting to watch a documentary?
Sandus Ozelunch. Oh,
yeah, I would probably pick...
eventually. Sandus Ozelunch is a great one.
Thank you.
Eventually, I would probably... Like, I do want to see the LeBron one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's LeBron.
Yeah.
I mean,
aside from LeBron, like personal favorites of yours.
Yeah, I have personal favorite athletes, but like I don't want to watch the Jimmy Butler doc. Like sad. Yeah, okay, great. I'm watching sad movie about Jimmy Butler's life and then him overcoming it. Like a lot of these guys, a lot of their story is told. And the cool thing about LeBron is that his career has now spanned multiple decades.
Yeah.
So there's just so much to work with there. So that's the kind of player that I'm picking is a guy. It has nothing to do with who's my favorite athlete, because those guys I just like to watch play sports.
Mm-hmm.
What I want is someone who's had compelling ups and downs and massive stages. And so, no, he would definitely be one for me, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
I can't even think of anybody that would even compare for caring even close to LeBron James. Like, I don't care about a Messi or Ronaldo doc. Maybe you do.
Yeah, oh, some quickly. People would.
Now let's flip that, because, yeah, of course, lots of people would. I'm just saying, not as interesting to me as LeBron's story.
Not everyone needs their story told is the big point.
Yeah.
Not everybody needs it.
True.
Yes. Austin, what were you going to say? Who's your guy?
No, I want to see and this is more of a joke, but Andrea Bargnani documentary. What happened to that guy, man? He doesn't even, he doesn't associate with the NBA anymore. He was the first overall pick. So much potential.
I think that this is what you'd call a Google search, not a documentary.
Primo Passant.
You don't think it would be interesting to see Andrea?
No.
Fair enough.
JD is out.
Legitimately, if we're doing a lot of pitches here today, no. No one's green lighting that studio. No one's sponsoring that one. Okay.
I would sponsor it.
Before we go, Jobo, soccer corner time.
What's up?
Lots of soccer stuff happened.
So when I went to
TFC a couple of weeks ago, Bradley got
He's bad.
And the people hated him.
Yeah.
and they were talking about how he's a moron with the tactics. They were going in on Bradley.
Yeah.
He gets canned yesterday. So what's the skinny on the from the TFC fans?
It was just, from all reports, it was an incredibly toxic environment. He was at odds with a lot of the players. He had like his own little camps. By the way,
just so everybody knows, Bob Bradley, not Michael Bradley.
Yeah, so Michael Bradley, his son, who is on the team, currently injured. But yeah, it was like Bob Bradley, he was named the manager. Like his, to explain it, it's like the relationships between like the players and Bob Bradley, like the two different tiers was really, really toxic. The players did not feel comfortable. They didn't feel comfortable playing. Bernadeschi was calling him out after games. Mm-hmm. And then Bob Bradley saying like, oh, I'm suspending you for a game. You're out of line. So it was just clearly a time. I'm not going to go into like all like the tactics because I'm going to bore people. they don't want to hear about that. But essentially, he was not the right guy for the team. He's not the right guy to manage the talent that they have. Mm-hmm. And it was time for a change. Now they're going into a summer transfer window without a sporting director, which is going to be super interesting because they're in last place. Mm-hmm. They have the highest payroll in the MLS.
Yeah.
And it seems like they have no direction. It's just a mess. But it is good that they've let him go. And now they're going to be pursuing someone else, hopefully someone before the transfer window, so they can get some changes in there and help Insigne and Bernadeschi. But yeah, from all reports, that's the lowdown.
Insigne
from what
seems
seen.
Like a miss too, and yeah, Berna, I know, has not been good as of late.
Yeah, he has one assist in his last 12 games.
Yeah,
not good.
Should have let
that
my
is
boy
not
vape
good for your second highest player.
And it was Bradley that told him he couldn't vape, right?
Let him
vape. All right, he's good enough. It's funny, man. You go out to bars now, and the youths are just vaping in bars. They don't give a crap. Yeah. They're just in there, and they're like, "Yeah, it's back." And I'm pissed as someone who likes a dart, who's
true.
Like, "Hey, this isn't fair."
I go outside.
This
I have the respect
right.
to go
this
outside.
Isn't right. This isn't right. Yeah. This is
disgusting.
Wrong.
It's honestly disgusting, and it needs to be addressed at a higher level than this podcast. I totally agree with you, JD.
What do you mean this podcast is the highest level there is?
I'm for more in government, Joe. Less, we need to table a bill where people vaping inside go to jail.
No, no,
because it's wrong. You can discriminate against smokers. You can't discriminate against vapers.
I'm the other way. I'm the other way. More freedom. There should be bars where you're just allowed to do whatever the hell you want.
You know, in Japan, you can smoke in bars, but you can't smoke on the street. It's such
You know what, though? Here's the thing. That's stupid, but also fair. I don't like telling businesses what they have to do. And yeah, people are always like, but what about the servers that work there? It's like, they don't have to work there. They can work at a non-smoking bar.
100%.
There's a lot of bars. There's a lot of restaurants.
You know what I'm more likely to tip? After my third dart.
Yes. Austin. Here's the thing, though. If you want to smoke inside, you're kind of greasy. Like, I would not want to smoke inside a bar.
Did you grow up with people smoking in the bars? Because I never, my whole
kind
life
of,
smoking had been banned from
inside
restaurants.
I was not legal age. What I do think is actually really stupid and lame is that you can't smoke on a patio outside.
Yes. Mm.
It's like, are you kidding me?
Shout
so what, the person takes one step off the patio onto the sidewalk and the smoke is like still right there too, but now it's legal. It's just stupid, man.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, if you're sitting outside, I'm a big believer of just, you're outdoors, cigs are in, you know? Like,
they're in play.
Yeah, there's no, you're not, the secondhand smoke thing is not happening when you're outside. Like, that's just not it. You're breathing in lots of crappy stuff. Just the amount of it that you're getting is so minuscule, it's not affecting you.
Well, it's not like the environment changes much when you're, like, sitting, like, on the patio and then, like, 2 feet over to the right when you're on the sidewalk.
And
it makes no difference.
Yeah, I just think, like, you know, why? This is so stupid. Why?
Why?
What is the reason? So someone is a little bit, they're like, oh, I don't like the smell. It's like, okay, well, you're at a bar. You're outside drinking. There's lots of stuff that's going to be happening that maybe you don't like.
With all this said, that we do not condone smoking on this podcast. Smoking is bad for you and you should not start it.
Sure. Like, oh, Austin.
Austin. Did you have any TFC thoughts from what you've been reading and stuff like that? Or
no, I feel like, listen, it's a two things can be true. I think that he's kind of a bum as a coach, but it's interesting because when they first brought him in here, I do remember, like, these are casual takes, all right? This is TFC casual time now. And when they brought him in here, people were pretty excited about it. This was supposed to be a pretty big name that they were bringing in to the organization. And yeah, I can relate to Michael Bradley because for a couple of years, my dad was a vice principal of the biggest high school in the Yukon and where all the bad kids went, the downtown one. And he had to suspend kids and people hated his guts. And I'd show up at parties sometimes and some dude would be like, I hate your dad. And I would go, all right, this sucks.
Oh, no.
So it's Michael Bradley. I get it. He's around and people are like, boo, your dad. We hate him. And you're like, ah, what am I supposed to do here? Can't turn on the fans, a.k.a. the cool kids. I don't want to just stab my father in his back here.
No, that's true.
But he'll be fine.
Yeah. I will say, just to add, like when you're mentioning Bob Bradley, he was the first American manager to manage in the Premier League, which is why he had that big smoke around him.
Yeah, but this LAFC. Is what I don't understand about how he's such a tactical moron. Like, the game has just passed him by because everybody hates him for the tactics. They're just
He got hired at Swansea because the American owners came in and they wanted to hire an American coach, and he lasted 12 games. Like,
sometimes
come on, Joe.
That Mac, but that is the soccer guy. That you're kind of the beach air soccer guy.
He's a cad.
No, but that's where all the smoke came from. Is that he had that title with him, and he was at LAFC, and they did well, and then
LAFC
came over to TFC.
Mackie?
Well, Carlos Vela was very good.
He was very
reason why they won. I mean, came from Juventus, scored like, what, 30 goals? Players win championships, JD, not coaches.
Mackie ending on a heater.
But this is what I'm kind of saying about it, where I'm like, it feels like more they missed on their international signings this year more than anything, and that their team is just not very well constructed, and just the team
itself.
A lot
of things can be true. There's a lot of messes around
the team. The team is not very good, right? They spent money on the goal, on the keeper, and he's halfway decent, but there's no team in front of him, and
spent a lot of money on attack, and they have like the second lowest goal scored in the MLS. It's just there's messes all over the place. There's holes all over the place. Bob Bradley was not the dude to come in and fix that.
Thank you for that Bernadeschi stat, though, because all the TFC boys I know are always like, Bern is the man. I can't wait to just casually drop that on them, being like, I'm going to drop atom bombs in group chats today, being like, do you know Bernadeschi only has one assist his last 11 games? There's nothing numbers. Soccer guys hate more than the casual just dropping in and giving an opinion like, hey, I don't think Bernadeschi's doing very well.
his numbers are not looking too hot this year.
Jeez, guys, you guys sure seem to love Bernadeschi for a guy with one assist in his last 11 games. Anyway, let's wrap this sucker up. I got to run. Subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, share it, do all those things, all right? Reach out.
13
games
now, by the way.
1-13?
1-13 games.
Joe, you got to be better as my stats guy. I almost dropped 1-11 to people.
You said 1-11. I said 1-12.
Then they played
New England on the weekend.
Joe, now didn't do anything you were else wrong, again. And then you were doubling down by trying to expose me for being wrong from your work.
I'm just clarifying the stat.
Yeah, okay.
Tough day for Joe. We'll do better tomorrow,
What do you
buddy?
Think about that? That's pretty tough, eh? Like, Neil just came in the studio and he sees that. Yeah, exactly. You're out, Joe. Go do work. The meaningful work. Go learn something from Neil. All right. There's no show tomorrow. There's no show. We're off. I should have said that earlier. But yeah, I'm off tomorrow. And then we're back on Thursday. James Myrtle.